Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Matt Davis, this is Parts Unknown. In the present day, we're days away from England versus Russia in the World Cup final in Moscow, right? But in 2005, we're in Los Angeles for WrestleMania 21. Woo! The dramatis personae, producer Ben wrote that, I had to look up what it meant. It's the characters in a novel or play, according to my Google machine. Helping me take another look at WrestleMania Goes Hollywood are Carl PS Anchor.
You can't handle the truth.
Anton Bam Bam Tolui.
Hello there.
And from Bad Street, Bedfordshire, it's Dr. Carrie Dunn.
Hello.
Right, so to start off, as we say, WrestleMania Goes Hollywood. They play film skits featuring the various wrestlers, which were all pretty funny. Eugene as Forrest Gump, Booker and Eddie as Jules and Vincent in Pulp Fiction, Trips as Braveheart, finishing with Stone Cold Steve Austin as Gladiator. I thought this was great stuff. The Doctor seems to disagree with me.
What? No, this is terrible. What are you even talking about? The only women that they use are women taking off films where they're either faking orgasms or crossing their legs to reveal lack of underwear. That is the only time they feature women in this section. It's hideous.
Keebler was wearing underwear. Can we just state that? Pretty sure. Even WWE wouldn't put Keebler's actual lady bits out there.
But they're ripping off Basic Instinct, and that's what the film was.
I quite enjoyed the vignettes. Anton?
Did you quite enjoy seeing Trish have an orgasm? Fake orgasm.
No, I liked Eddie and
Stone Cold doing Maximus Decimus Meridius from Gladiator. I enjoyed that bit. The rest of it, John Cena doing You Can't Handle the Truth was kind of fun too. It's stupid. It's hilarious and stupid. It is something that is funny in 2005, and then you watch it in 2018, you're like, even when wrestling is bad, wrestling is interesting to look at.
It's weird they roped in The Undertaker. That was the weird thing, seeing Undertaker outside of Undertaker clothes. That was really weird. I liked it just for that, actually. Seeing him actually have a ginger beard and that kind of thing without the hair dye and without the eyeshadow. Yeah, good for you, mate.
Okay, so we've established that my sense of humour level is pretty base. What about the actual wrestling card? Just the 8 matches on it. Things kick off with what ought to have been an absolute cracker. Now, I've evoked some ire already on this show. I feel like I'm about to get panned again by you three here. Rey Mysterio versus Eddie Guerrero. Producer Ben thought that this was really, really good. I thought it was massively, massively disappointing. Carl? You don't like me anymore, do you?
This is really good. What are you talking about?
Ray's constantly fiddling with his mask. Eddie is really cross that he's in the opening match and is not shy of making that known. It's too short. They try to fit loads of spots in instead of telling a story. It was nowhere near as good as it should have been.
Ray does keep fiddling with his mask because Eddie is pouring at it, because that's Lucha's style of, I'm going to mess with your mask because that's how we can do it. Eddie very clearly does not like being here and is very much, I can't believe I used to be a main eventer and now I'm doing this. They do pack in a lot of stuff, but the story in it is amazing. And it's one of those matches where I don't mind that it's not perfect because I know what it leads to later on. And I know that these two could fight whenever, wherever. And we got that ridiculously hilarious and bad feud that ended up with the child custody papers on a ladder match at SummerSlam. Yeah, Eddie and Rey Mysterio can go whenever they wanted. There are many matches in WWE history and in WCW history where they have matches, and it's just basically, we're going to show you what Lucha style is, and they are all varying quality levels of good. There's a little bit where Eddie Guerrero hits the Three Amigos, and just the crispness of his hips as he does the Three Amigos stuff, you're like, oh, wow. Eddie Guerrero was bell-to-bell top three all time, maybe. It's like Flair, him, Sean.
Big call. Anton, lest we forget that this feud spawned arguably the worst t-shirt in wrestling history, I'm Your Pappy. What did you think of the match?
I'm kind of in the middle between you two in terms of, it felt like they kind of gave you what you wanted to see out of Mysterio, but we didn't get enough. I don't think we got enough out of Eddie, and I didn't really feel as though the match lived up to how good I know both of them are. I'm not a huge Rey Mysterio fan. I never got it at the time. I don't get it looking back. I think there were people that were better doing what he does. I just love the fact that Eddie Guerrero actually ducks the 6-1 line like everybody should. That's, you know, my thing about Rey Mysterio is it's similar to how it is with John Cena and with Roman Reigns now. I kind of feel like they're thrust down your throat in terms of, so Cena's the, you know, the permanent face. Reigns is the guy. And Mysterio was the little lucha that can, effectively. And that's all it ever was. All the storyline ever was. It's all it, and I just struggled. There was no character development. There's no, you know, all right, fair enough, I'll bring his kids into occasion. But other than that, that's kind of it. And I just never really, I never rooted for him. I don't really care if he got swatted away by someone bigger or was the ultimate underdog. And so when he doesn't, when he just does in a match like this, it's just like, yeah, he can do that. I don't care. I'll move on to the next one. That was entertaining for 10 minutes.
Eddie Guerrero would tragically pass away 6 months after this match. We spoke at length about that last week, Carrie. So I'm interested to get your opinion on Rey Mysterio and his WWE time as a whole. Financially, it was a success for him as a character, as a wrestler. Do you look back on it with fondness? Is it, as Anton says, was he shoved down our throats?
Yeah, I'm kind of with Anton on this a little bit. And again, I say I wasn't watching when this was actually happening, so I'm kind of watching it in retrospect, knowing what Ray and his knees turned into. The kind of underdog story, there's only so many times that I think you can play that, and that was kind of the only well that they went to so often, I think, with Mysterio. But I liked this match. I like when they're kind of getting the tag teams split into singles matches and getting friends to feud against each other. And I like that there was a handshake at the end rather than anyone turning heel on each other. Yeah, I liked it. I wasn't mad about it. I liked it.
And Eddie does turn heel on Ray. It gets us one of the greatest promos in SmackDown history. So he comes out on the chair and takes out a mask of Rey Mysterio's and basically starts talking like it's Hamlet. Goes, do you think that makes me happy? Barkay! Which, I've memorised it because I love it so much. I'm all in on Eddie Guerrero. And it's a shame that we don't have enough WrestleMania moments and big WrestleMania matches for me to tell you how much I love Eddie Guerrero.
Carrie alluded to watching it and how you watch it. I've wanted to raise this for a couple of episodes. Let's do it now, apropos, not very much. How are we watching these now? So, for example, I'm watching them in the daytime on my 40-inch TV. I think it makes a massive difference how and when you watch WWE pay-per-view. So, Carrie, are you doing similar to me? I mean, I've done that with all of them so far. I sometimes watch the live shows on my iPad, yeah. Headphones in, very different experience.
It is a very different experience in terms of kind of the actual technicalities of viewing. I mean, I tend to watch actually everything on the network on the iPad just because it's kind of easier to carry around with me. But I guess the biggest difference for me is kind of the context in which I watch. If I'd been watching WWE while this is actually going on, I can't see me carrying on watching it if I was watching this in order. If I'd been given some of this WWE stuff to watch, particularly the women's stuff, and then I know that I get kind of angry tweets from people saying, you know, it was fine at the time. No, it wasn't. It was 10 years ago. It's not fine at the time. It wasn't fine then. It's not fine now. But yes, and some of the stuff as we get further and further, as we go further and further back, I can kind of make my peace with watching it now and thinking, yeah, okay, things have changed. But yeah, some of it really worries me. The racism stuff, the sexism stuff, the homophobia stuff. And yeah, that kind of context worries me more, I think, rather than the technicalities of it.
The technicalities of it, Carl, I'm going to keep pushing this. You are our token millennial, so I'm assuming that you watch each show split over 4 or 5 separate devices in bite-sized chunks, ranging from in a coffee shop paying for an overpriced latte to on the train to in bed. Am I right, or are you a more traditional viewer?
You're completely correct. I watch this on my PlayStation 4, my phone, and my iPad in different spots. If it's a match that I have good memory of, so if it was on a top 20 list of WWE matches, I might watch that out of order. So this Eddie Guerrero Mysterio match I've seen 3 or 4 times in the last 5 years because I really, really enjoy it, and I'll watch anything with Eddie Guerrero in. If it's a match I haven't seen before, I'll make special effort with my little notepad and go through, which is why I'm having these weird, oh wait, Jericho's not as good as I thought he'd be, and oh my god, Cena's terrible, fun moments. And you know, I didn't realise how much I had disdain for Randy Orton.
No need to ask Guy Anton, because he's a company guy. What he does is he buys them all retrospectively on Sky Box Office.
That's exactly what I do.
And watches them that way. We know that.
It was really awkward. We were doing the Sky Lockup podcast the other day, and obviously Jeff, the WWE editor, sort of, you know,
say his full name because it's brilliant.
Oh, Jefferson Lake. Yeah. Sounds like a wrestler. It's a great name.
You need to get Rob Palmer on that show as well, by the way.
Yeah. He was obviously, you know, saying, oh, if you want to watch Money in the Bank, you can book it now for $14.99. And then he said, well, that's great value for money. And a kind of awkward silence in the room, just thinking, oh, for two-thirds of the price?
I want to go on to something that I've been really looking forward to talking about, and I'm sure we all have. Shawn Michaels versus Kurt Angle. 27 minutes of pure class and storytelling. Didn't overstay its welcome, even though it was that long. They got a standing ovation. He was just a sexy Kurt who'd make your ankle hurt in the build-up. So we got comedy Kurt in that a bit. But damn if this match was not one of, if not the best match that we've watched on WrestleMania up to this point, Carrie.
Yeah.
Certainly in the top five.
Certainly top three, I would say, if not the best. I haven't even written any notes for this because I was just watching and watching and watching. And the commentary was actually pretty good for this as well. And Kurt Angle, prime Kurt Angle, is exceptional. And it kind of makes what he is now even kind of sadder, I think. It makes watching this now even more poignant, I think, knowing what happens to him, certainly physically, and the decline that he went through. But yeah, this is amazing. Fantastic ring moves, fantastic narrative, fantastic storytelling. Beautiful.
Carl, you spoke on the last episode about Kurt Angle's golden year, and it's obviously spoken about how quickly he took to wrestling and how much he accomplished in such a short space of time. The beauty of this, the story was who's the best wrestler, which is always a great thing when you can pull it off. But you've got the kind of opposites of Kurt, who packed all that into such a short space of time, and then Michaels, whose career stretched years and years and years. You think about dream matches or dream anything and anything that you like, you know, what would be your ultimate band lineup or whatever, what would be your ultimate wrestling match, you would put Kurt Angle versus Shawn Michaels quite high at the top of that list, you know, if it was like alive or dead or whatever.
And you'd pick these vintages of both characters as well. One thing I do when I do a lot of fantasy booking in like sports conversations or wrestling conversations is you can't just pick Ric Flair. You have to pick the year of Ric Flair, because, you know, are you going to get brawling Ric Flair, or are you going to get I'm going to use those as submissions Ric Flair? And like 2005 Kurt Angle is a machine. I think I spoke about this before. Kurt Angle can do everything, right? You want him to be a monster heel? He can do that. You want him to be an underdog? He can do that. You want to have a technical mat wrestling match? He can do that. You want to have a brawl? He can do that. You want to do submission stuff? He can do that. You want to do some high-flying stuff? He's got the best moonsault other than Charlotte's. Like, he can do everything. He can be funny. He can be serious. He can be like, oh, I'm such a goof too. I'm going to destroy your leg. So in this entire build for this thing, yeah, he does I'm Just a Sexy Kurt. But then he like ruins Sensational Sherry. He brings back Marty Jannetty in what's meant to be a comedy segment. And then he breaks Marty Jannetty's ankle as well. And then Shawn Michaels is also there. And isn't that weird? When you talk about wrestling, then go, and Shawn Michaels was also there. There's a great bit. One great thing about Kurt is he has this thing where, obviously, when he's entering the end game of a match, he takes down these straps. He does my favourite thing where once he's taken down these straps, he puts them back on to take them back off. It's like, yeah, it's real endgame now. Which is just like, again, small, tiny, goofy things that he has no right knowing or learning or understanding about carnival ring psychology. But he could do it because Kurt Angle was a wrestling unicorn.
Anton, lavish further praise on this match, please.
Not a problem at all. The ankle lock is my favourite submission in WWE history. And
Shawn selling it is just glorious.
Shawn selling it is wonderful. And I, at the end of it, I mean, obviously, Shawn should not be able to walk again, ever. But it's just wonderful. And it sometimes when matches are based around a submission, it's just rushing to the end game. It's just getting to that point where that person taps out because they've got one move that's synonymous with who they are. Kurt could do anything, as Carl said. I mean, the hang time he gets on his moonsaults, the mat game, everything about this match is wonderful. It's one of my favourite matches ever, never mind of wrestling. It's just a thing of beauty. It really is.
I just want to say about the submission stuff. Now, when I watch matches with submissions, I often get quite confused because I'm hypermobile. So when I see someone put a submission on, I don't understand why it would hurt because my joints go in weird directions anyway.
That's what hypermobile is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay.
So Randy Orton has hypermobile shoulders, just so you know. So watching submission moves in general, I'm kind of watching and thinking, I don't understand why that would hurt. And so I will kind of sit there watching it and I'll be trying to kind of move my arms around thinking, why does that hurt? What? How do normal people move their arms or their legs or whatever? Watching Angle and Michaels, I understand that the angle lock would hurt. Even though my ankle would twist that way, I can believe that Sean's ankle is hurting because of the way that he's selling it, but also of the way that Kurt puts it on. He makes it look vicious way a lot of people don't make submissions look vicious. They put on a submission hold because that's what they do. Mm. But the way that he uses it is vicious.
There's two... I was watching this WrestleMania with my friend Michael Hardy, and he said there's two sorts of submission holds and sorts of submission type matches. So you've got John Cena has a submission hold that if he's like, this is another way I can win a match.
It's a cuddle.
Whereas you have Kurt Angle with the ankle lock and you've got Ric Flair with the figure four, and their entire match is, I'm going to weaken your body part enough because once I get you in that hold, you're gone. That's it. That's the end of the match. There was this amazing bit, when Eddie Guerrero went to go pass the torch to John Cena, and Eddie Guerrero talks to John Cena about the ankle lock and basically goes, at some point in time, no matter how good you are, no matter how strong you are, Kurt's going to put you in that thing. And that's, he goes, everything will go black. You'll feel pain in a way that you've never felt pain before. And you have to push through. You have to push through, Cena. You're going to have to do this and do this and do this. And it's this amazing thing of, Kurt also does this when he's fighting Sean in this match, where he is on the beginning of getting the lock in. Sean runs out and Kurt's like, I'm going to catch you in that lock and then you're done. Like, I'm so good at this submission thing that the moment I finish, it's the end game, which is maybe, like, he has it, Flair has it, Kenny Omega has it similar with his One Winged Angel wrestling move. But it's amazing when a wrestler has a thing where it's just like, you can't dread it, run from it.
Another reason I love this match is because it mixes the sublime with the scrappy. So
yeah, there's the bit where Kurt sort of takes an inadvertent blow to the head, doesn't he, from a stray knee or something, as I remember.
And Michaels is trying to do anything he can to get out of the ankle lock, and he's rolling around, and Kurt's going, nope, not going to let you go. And then he gets into another position where any other match you wouldn't, you know, he'd just break the hold because, you know, I mean, all of a sudden Kurt sort of maneuvers his body around the back, and Michaels is clawing his way out, and he just think, yeah. Because if somebody put me in an ankle lock, I would do absolutely anything to get out of it. And it just shows how much both these... I know we said it last week with Michael. It just shows how much both these guys get the artistry of wrestling.
Mm. Make sure, if you haven't watched it in a while or you've never watched it ever, do go back and watch this. It's glorious. Now for a return to our occasional series, Wrestling Phrases That Make Us Feel Warm and Fuzzy. One of mine came up in this match when JR said that Michaels had returned to a vertical base. He stood up. Just sweet, isn't it? Carrie, have you got any?
Favourite phrases?
Yeah.
Yeah, Punk, when he's coming out and he shouts, it's clobbering time.
Nice.
Always gives me the feels.
Cole, you'll like that one, presumably, as a comic book guy.
Gorilla Monsoon going, a dropkick and a beauty.
Anton?
It's Jericho's never, ever, because I can't help but do it as well.
Join us for more of those on future episodes. Let us know yours as well, actually, at the PU Podcast. Let's go to the title matches now. John Cena versus JBL for the WWE title. As underwhelming as you would expect from these two, JBL, the wrestling god, had been murked by Trips and Flair in a pre-match backstage bit, which kind of undercut the whole match entirely. John Cena just beat some chump. He didn't beat anybody special, did he? Because Triple H and Ric Flair told us so.
It's no clinic. This is the classic John Cena gets beaten up 15 minutes and then dramatically overcomes, which is what we didn't know was that will become the method for future John Cena matches, and we'd all get bored of it after a year. Fair play to both these boys. They you know, we give them nonsense about how they weren't great wrestlers. They both didn't mind bleeding, which is like a really bad compliment. But yeah, and also it was at the time I was so sick of JBL. This is around about the time where quite a few Attitude Era millennials, people who are millennials now that grew up in the Attitude Era, sort of checked out, because you had JBL holding the title of SmackDown for 260 days, and I think Triple H was in the middle of his reign of terror. And this big thing about WrestleMania 21 was, yeah, you go Hollywood, but it was also, we're going to remove these old guard champions and put the brand new guard on John Cena and Batista. And it's amazing how it didn't quite work out for reasons that we explained in the WrestleMania 23 episode, because there was no one later coming around to challenge him.
Anton, this was very, very basic in terms of the thugonomics. Cena's first title win, he did his best to ham it up, threw himself into the crowd, rah, rah, rah. But even then, the reaction was pretty tepid.
It was pretty tepid. If anyone ever asks you, what's your problem with Cena, just say WrestleMania 21. Just that's the answer. Because A, this is a poor main event on SmackDown. The match itself, because it is just so formulaic. Cena, five moves, one AAF, what we're calling it, and done. So, as Carl said, he hasn't really developed since. And the crowd weren't, you know, some of the crowd weren't buying it then, and now lots of people aren't buying it. So in terms of...
There was definitely clamouring for Cena.
No, he was popular, but the crowd weren't buying what was going on in the ring. They weren't happy with the product.
Hmm.
Yeah, he was hugely popular, but amongst a fan base that, you know, don't care about what goes on in the ring, but in terms of don't accept more of a cartoony style sort of in the ring, I think. And that's the fan base John Cena has, and that's absolutely fine. But this is just difficult to watch and care, and
it's basic in 2005.
This guy has dominated the company for 15, 16 years, and when you see the genesis of it, I can't help but go, why? Other than merch sales.
Try to play the game. Right, we can get on something a bit better now, Carrie. Triple H versus Batista. Of course it goes on last. Before we get to the actual match, Batista's pyro didn't work, and Lemmy didn't have the courtesy or couldn't remember the lyrics to a song that he'd written, which was Triple H's entrance music. So he's just kind of going, it's all about the game.
I literally watched this morning, and I had to watch it again just because I was thinking, let me just not know his own lyrics. It's fantastic. This is literally the best thing I've ever seen on the WWE Network. I'm going to watch it over and over again forever. It's going to be my new Matt Stryker comedy moment.
Triple H gave a eulogy at Lemmy's funeral, didn't he? It's just kind of weird. I mean, Triple H was obviously big into him, but I don't think Lemmy was that bothered about wrestling per se. The story of the match was the devolution, if you like, of evolution, the dissolution, maybe. It was a good match. Triple H was unselfish in putting somebody over. Jim Cornette's been very vocal saying, yeah, it's a 40-year-old dude who's his mate who was absolutely no threat to him because, his career wasn't going to last very long. Is that accurate or is it harsh?
Well, it's Jim Cornette, isn't it? So probably both inaccurate.
But he says so much that some of it will be correct.
No, some of it will be like a stop clock is he's right twice a day. I don't know. I suppose there is a grain of truth in that. But we've seen that before with Triple H. Even though people are not necessarily a threat to him, he'll still squash them or refuse to put them over or make them look ridiculous in some small way. And he doesn't here. Again, I like this. It's my mate Dave again. I think he's really good here, and he looks like a proper champion. And yeah, even though his pyro didn't work, so yeah.
It says a lot that this story is a mulligan because they tried it before with Randy Orton and it didn't work. So they tried, I've won the title, Triple H, no, the title belongs to me with Randy, and that didn't work. And then that pretty much ruined Randy Orton's potential. And then they went, oh, let's do it with the other guy in Evolution, in Batista. And it's amazing how crisper and cleaner it worked as a storyline, which I think says a lot about how Batista understood empathy more. Just understood how to make the crowd empathize with him. Because, like, look at Dave Batista. He's a mammoth human being. Why would I ever think he's an underdog or would, like, maybe struggle to defeat the daring do come the big stage? But you go into that match going, he looks kind of scared, which says a lot about him and how he can, in the right circumstances, have amazing wrestling matches.
Anton, here's a hot take which I'd like your opinion on. Evolution, this is something that I dreamt up after watching the Nature Boy 30 for 30 last year. Evolution, the purpose of it was actually to make Ric Flair feel better about himself rather than to get Batista and Randy Orton over. Has that got any credence to it?
I mean, there's an element of that. I think it was only ever really about Triple H and Ric Flair. One was, you're right, to sort of satiate the needs and the ego of Flair and sort of recognise what he's done. And it's believable that he would want to give something back to these two other guys coming through. But they didn't really do anything with the other two guys. I mean, you listen to the reaction that the crowd gave Batista when he won compared to Cena. Batista's got a bigger pop. Mm-hmm. And they play into it in future feuds between Batista and Cena in terms of how their careers mirrored. Well, actually, okay, fine, in terms of, I'm sure, merch sales and the kids obviously were more into Cena, but there was a huge groundswell of support between Batista that fizzled post, you know, the faction he was in before. So I think you're kind of right. I think that backs up your point.
Evolution exists because Triple H wanted to do his version of the Four Horsemen. And I'll still be really excited when they go into Hall of Fame.
So he can be a three-time Hall of Famer.
He can tie Ric Flair on three Hall of Fames.
Sledgehammer alert in this match. How did that spot go down for noted Sledgehammer skeptic?
I've genuinely just stopped caring about Sledgehammers now. Just please use another weapon. I can't say that because it's the past. But you know what I mean.
He nailed it this time, which is great.
Yeah, he does.
Which I think is an interesting thing. Because we're watching backwards, it's clear he misses more nowadays. Yeah. Because the storyline is meant to be he's getting on a bit.
But also, whereas in the build-up, it was Batista was stopping the sledgehammers, wasn't it? He was using his bare hands to stop a sledgehammer attack. So I think that's why, in terms of the whole build and the narrative, that's why he could actually successfully use his weapon of choice.
It's also one of the best promos, like WrestleMania promo packages, of just the video before the match, why Batista rose up and the whole Batista calling the Raw versus SmackDown billboards. And eventually, give him the thumbs down. Yeah. In 2005, WWE documentary stuff hasn't quite got to the stage where it is today. But that's like one of the... Oh, there it is. One of these days, you're going to become too good at telling your own myth.
So we've talked about the classic wrestling match and the two title matches. Stick around next. We're going to be heaping praise on our favourite, Randy Orton.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to Parts Unknown. Hulk Hogan was inducted into the Hall of Fame this year, so he got his moment to talk shit, flex and pose against the evil Muslim Muhammad Hassan, the Italian-American Muhammad Hassan. I didn't really want to talk about this segment because it went on forever and it involved Eugene, but Anton...
It's not so much Eugene, because I think we're all in agreement in terms of just how awful and uncomfortable and just anybody who has learning difficulties, you know, in terms of would see somebody like that, or knows, and it's just horrible. So I don't think we need to necessarily talk about that. I can't believe how long Eugene was in WWE as well. This is also worrying. But Hogan's reappearance. So Hogan comes off the back of Eugene's speech about, you know, I love wrestling, and WrestleMania 6 was my favourite memory, Hulk Hogan versus Ultimate Warrior. And then you see the obviously xenophobic, racially insensitive, you know, sort of portrayal of two foreign characters come, and you know, that kind of thing. So fine, WWE, deal with that. We're used to it. Absolutely fine. But then Hulk comes to defend Eugene, beats up the two guys in the ring, and then Eugene disappears. So Hulk doesn't give Eugene his moment. So effectively, Hulk comes down to just beat up two darker-skinned guys in the ring and walk away with them while the American flag flies in the background.
Because Eugene was his friend, and if you hurt his friends, then you hurt his pride. He's got to be a man. He can't let it slide.
But it just, given what we know about Hulk Hogan, it makes it even more uncomfortable to watch. He's just come to beat up two foreigners because he didn't really come to protect his mate. So...
There is an episode of Hogan Knows Best.
I loved Hogan Knows Best.
MTV.
You watched Hogan Knows Best?
I watched Hogan Knows Best and Brooke Knows Best.
Hilarious. Wow. Hogan Knows Best is hilarious.
And there is an episode of Hogan Knows Best which is all about this one segment at WrestleMania.
I remember it well.
And how Hogan was trying to get himself into shape because he wanted to look really, really good for this one segment. And... the crowd pops big when he beats up Muhammad Hassan, and you're just like, wow, wrestling. Wrestling's weird and kind of gross.
Yep.
Carrie, anything to say?
No, nothing at all.
Very good. Good audio. So after that, we got The Undertaker versus Randy Orton. Randy in full legend killer mode here. Good hype video beforehand. Producer Ben asked, and I wondered this, was Taker on a Segway on the way to the ring? He kind of like glided down. It was quite a long ramp.
He's levitating. He's kind of levitating.
My other big note on this was Cowboy Bob Orton needs another doctor. Like, his arm just didn't heal.
It did not.
It's either like a, you know, a serious masturbatory ailment, or it's, you know, just, it just didn't work. The cast, I mean, 30 years, the poor bloke.
Maybe it's not a real injury.
No, not even that. So Cowboy Bob was involved in this. This was a good match, wasn't it? I mean, I know we're sort of loathe to say that about Randy Orton, but I feel like the last couple of episodes we've had some decent Randy.
Yeah, I don't think we're loathe to say nice things about Randy Orton when he deserves them. I think we've been quite complimentary when he's deserved complimentary comments. But yeah, this was fine. I think I'm going to say something vaguely unpopular now, in that the more I go back in time and watch these WrestleManias, the less I like The Undertaker. And I find his matches quite dull to watch, in that it feels like a box-ticking exercise so much of the time. It feels so samey to me. And again, I wasn't watching at this point, and so I'm coming to this completely fresh, and I'm just thinking, yeah, all right, you're going to do old school, you're going to do this, you're going to do that. Okay, let's just get all that over with. Let's get to the fact that you're going to win. It just feels really, really dull to me to watch. That a terrible thing to say?
I think that's fair. And okay. I think the reason this is better than passable is actually because of Orton, not because of Taker. Taker's doing his same old thing, but it's actually, you know, it's Orton that turns the choke slam into an RKO and that kind of thing. Actually, you know, so yeah, I think you're right. I've got no problem giving Randy Orton praise because he is physically gifted. He is very, very good in the ring when he wants to be.
On his shoulders.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Yeah.
This is good. This is good Randy Orton. Legend Killer is one of his best phases because he has a clear, consistent character and motivation, and that character is, in the Stone Cold parlance, is part of his personality turn up to 11. What we know and think of Randy Orton is that he's kind of an entitled dick. So when he's running around WWE, Randy Orton, the character, acting like a kind of entitled dick, you're like, oh yeah, cool. That's interesting. That's something I believe. It's when Randy Orton's trying to be a babyface, that's when I get confused. I'm like, well, you're not, because your resting face is a smirk. Something that really stuck out in this match, one, Taz talks way too much. doesn't let the match breathe.
He was not a good commentator, was he?
No, he's not. He has a podcast, calling himself the Human Podcast Machine. I mean, I know it's a reference of you. It's not what. That's how I feel a lot about Taz. Like, that's not what. It's not as clever as you. And in the promo package, Cowboy Bob Orton, when he begs Undertaker, when Undertaker hasn't dyed his hair properly, he begs Undertaker, he goes, Randy Orton is considered by many to be like the future of this business. I'm begging you, please. You know, he won't survive if he has a fight with you. Please spare my boy. And it was that sentence that Randy Orton is considered by many to be the future of this business, which he was. At the time, there were articles on the WWE website calling him the next Stone Cold. And I've said it before, I'll say it again. The moment they turned him babyface to defeat Chris Benoit at Backlash, to turn him, to make, give him the youngest world champion thing, threw so much of like potential down the drain, because he'd done everything by then.
That was 15 years ago.
One thing I'd like to see with Orton. So we've obviously, like you said, the best version of Orton has been the Legend Killer, and now he's a veteran. So why can't he be the Dream Killer? Why can't he be the killer in terms of you've got to beat this guy if you're coming up from NXT, or if you're trying to get up from the mid-card? You know, why can't he be the guy that's like, I'm going to punt you back to NXT? Because that's believable, because there's motivation for him being the smirking, horrible human being that, you know, in terms of that's the best version of Randy.
So that was that. That was pretty much it in terms of the big singles matches for the men. Next up, Trish Stratus versus Christy Hemme with Lita. I'd totally forgotten about Christy Hemme. She won the Raw Diva Search. Trish had spray-painted the word slut on her back in the build-up. It was an all right match, though, all 4 minutes of it.
It was fine. Again, we've got JR saying that Trish is just jealous of Hemi's success. Okay, whatever. Trish is quite clunky here in the ring, but she just looks like a star. The way she carries herself and the way that she puts that match together and drags Christy through it, essentially, when she's not that experienced herself. It's fine for what it is.
Any thoughts on Christy Hemme's glittering WWE career, Carl?
Not particularly. This whole match, it's a proxy feud for when Lita returns from injury. And it's a real shame there was never a Trish versus Lita WrestleMania match. And we'll have to settle for the Raw main event instead.
From here we go to the first ever Money in the Bank. They said, Anton, that it was Chris Jericho's idea. He was in it with Benoit, Edge, Christian Kane, Shelton, and Tyson Tomko was hanging around with Christian too. It was good, but the kind of all the headbutts from Benoit and stuff, as we've spoken before, is difficult viewing at the best of times. But in retrospect, it's
the most painful headbutt I've seen. I can remember seeing as well, because he lands on Kane's shoulder after diving from the top of a ladder, and Kane obviously starts writhing around in pain like he's supposed to, but there's genuine pain there, and Benoit's cut open straight away. And you're right, your first thought is the CTE. Sort of scans and the West Virginia study that looked at his brain. Afterwards, the 85-year-old Alzheimer's patient reference in the report. So that's just really difficult to watch. Match itself is, in terms of a ladder match, it's interesting because it's a slower pace than previous matches, which means you have more focus on the individual moments that led to the big spot. The ladder matches, especially that follow sort of 4 or 5 years later, so the final ladder, Money in the Bank ladder matches at WrestleMania before it gets its own pay-per-view, are carnage, and it's difficult to keep up. And then you get the ladder matches at WrestleMania sort of 30, 31, 32, which are fun because they figured out how to do a ladder match. This is Genesis in terms of there's a little bit more story behind each move in this match, which I really appreciate. And it's not the best ladder match you'll ever see, but it's good considering they were still trying to figure out how to make it great.
And it's also quite clear two or three members, well, they don't know how big Money in the Bank can be. So the briefcase is just the regular office briefcase rather than the metal one or the one with the logo in front of it. And it's also become apparent like two or three of the performers in this ladder match have no time for this ladder match. They're like Jericho himself, that's a resplendent beard, but he clearly doesn't think this is a good idea. He seems quite unhappy in this ladder match. Christian's trying his best, but he's also like, eh. Chris Benoit, for reasons, is very annoyed that he's no longer in like main event area, but is instead in a ladder match. And you get that feeling from quite a few people in this match where they were in. Why am I in this silly ladder match? I'd much rather be like in the main event.
Well, Wikipedia suggested that the first idea was to have a submission match between Edge, Jericho and Benoit, and then the others would have the ladder match round them. That's what Wikipedia around told them. Me. Apparently so.
That would have been really,
really
strange.
I don't know whether that's Wikipedia not explaining things properly, but they definitely say that there's a the idea was to have a submission match between those three, which would A, make sense, and B, also explain why they look a bit puzzled that they're in a ladder match.
But Edge with the Money in Bank briefcase, even an unbranded one, they probably bought. I was going to say probably bought from Staples. It was at the Staples Center, so that makes complete sense. Looks right. Edge with the briefcase looks right. Yeah, you know,
and he kept it for a full 9 months.
Yeah, exactly. Edge, there are. You know, you see the old World Heavyweight Championship belt, and the first person I think of is Edge, in terms of, because it's not the WCW, but it's the WWE version. First person I think of is Edge. See the Money in the Bank briefcase, first person I think of is Edge.
Some people look great with certain tools. I can't. The Intercontinental title looks weird when The Miz isn't holding it. And this is what I think feeds into what whoever, you know, by the time this will go out, Money in the Bank, the pay-per-view, would have aired. But I keep trying to think what Finn Balor will look like carrying a briefcase around for 4 months, and I can't see it. So I'm like, oh, maybe he's not going to win.
It also covers his glorious abs, which no one wants.
I'll tell you what he looked like. He looked like a bloke smiling.
He looked like a guy who moonlights as a stripper. So he's, you know, he's done his office job. He's like, okay, cool. Sorry, I'm late. I just got to have my work briefcase.
That's full of his stripper tools.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Also, I love Matt. I love Matt. Obviously, as the host, can't quite fully say. He's trying to get us to say what he feels. So whenever there's a scene around, he kind of looks at me. That Finn Balor smile thing. Come on, what do you really think of Finn Balor?
I think that he's a terrifically gifted wrestler who needs to do something other than smile his way to the ring all the time, basically. I'm rapidly losing interest in him, unfortunately. But not in Edge at this time, who would go on to, I would suggest, maybe do the best cash-in ever, the most Edge cash-in ever. New Year's Revolution, after Cena had just won an Elimination Chamber match, he comes out with Vince to totally legitimise it, and it was absolutely glorious.
And the little way he hands it over, two-handed to Vince, he's like, he's got a little smile, he just goes, here you are, I'm going to go feast. He's like, oh, he's such a little theatre nerd.
And he went on to give Cena one of the best feuds that Cena's ever had. So the only match we've got in inverted commas still to talk about is Big Show and his nappy against Akebono. It's called Miwashi, the big pant thing that he was wearing. It was pretty horrific. There was a lot of Big Show's arse all over the screen. I'm imagining, Carl, you were sports entertained to the max by this.
I'm going to admit I didn't watch this. I got to the node and I went, nah, life's too short. Skipped it. Poor Big Show, man. But why?
Apparently Vince was very cross that Akebono was supposed to look ginormous. This was Big Show was on Stone Cold's podcast recently. Akebono was supposed to look ginormous, but Show was in one of his fat phases and was actually bigger.
My favourite part is actually when Big Show comes to the ring. So he comes out in a sort of traditional Japanese robe with his arms up, sort of, you know, waving to the crowd, but he looks like a man who's been marched out by police after a raid at a Happy Ending massage parlor. Like, no one wants to be here, everyone's seen me, let's do this, let's get on with this. And there's something weirdly, strangely mesmeric about watching Akebono's bulging sort of stomach and crotch fat, in terms of, it's there, it doesn't go away, it wobbles in a way that fat doesn't, like, there's a little bit, there's muscle in there, so it's got a different consistency, it's odd, it's really odd, I don't know why this happened. I completely agree with Carl. I feel sorry for Big Show that he has to swallow a lot of turds, doesn't he? But that's not a phrase. But this is just, it happened, didn't it? This actually happened, didn't it?
Carrie, this is kind of the equivalent for straight women or gay men of the pillow fight, I would say. So just how aroused were you by the sight of these two behemoths?
Not so much, I have to say. Big Show actually looks embarrassed when he comes out.
He does.
And that actually kind of put home to me just how bad this was going to be. Because if Big Show looks embarrassed by something he's going to do, you know it's going to have to be bad. Because, as we've said, Big Show has done a lot of terrible stuff and he's just kind of sucked it up and not really bothered that much. But Yeah, this was embarrassing. It was bad.
Yeah, I mean, good on Big Show for getting through it, but let's not forget he got a 10-year, million-dollar downside per year contract, so we should feel that sorry for him. We're kind of wrapping up now. Let's have a look at the Hall of Fame. I'm going to suggest and ask the question that this is the best Hall of Fame class there's ever been. Hulk Hogan, Roddy Piper, Bob Orton, Jimmy Hart, Paul Orndorff, Nikolai Volkoff, the Iron Sheik, and Jimmy Hart, whose birthday is on New Year's Day. There's a fact for you. Carrie, where does Jimmy sit on your Hart League table list?
He doesn't fit into the Hart League table list, sadly. You have to be genetically related rather than just share the name. But no, this is a great Hall of Fame class. I feel a little bit bad for Roddy Piper because I think, like any other year, yeah, he would have been the headliner. But great stuff.
But I guess the counter to that, Carl, is that Piper got a Piper's Pit segment as part of the show with Stone Cold and eventually with Carlito, who was also there. Is that kind of deference to the fact that Piper was such a big deal that he deserved the spotlight to be on him in a way that it wouldn't be if you're in a class with Hulk Hogan?
It's just typical Hulk Hogan shafting Roddy Piper one more time. There's a great... there's an episode, I think, of David Shoemaker's podcast when he was on Grantland where Hulk Hogan is talking about how certain people used to go up to him and go, hey, like, how do I get into the main event? It's like, well, you know, if you let me beat you once, then eventually we can feud back and forth. And, you know, Hulk Hogan's working shoemaking, like, yeah, you know, I feuded all these people. Roddy was the only one who would never let me go over him because Roddy was like, obviously you're not going to, like, let me beat you in response. You're always going to beat me and disappear, which is true. Like, Roddy was one of the only people ever wise to just, like, how bad Hulk Hogan was as a person.
Anton, do you think that it was Piper's idea or, say, Vince's to have it be Austin as the person that he interacted with in the ring?
I think it would have been Vince's, but I think it would have been a concession to Roddy, if that makes sense. Because, obviously, they haven't worked together in the past. And it was quite funny watching Roddy do his whole, I'm confused by who these people are, because I clearly don't watch a product anymore. That's his gimmick. Even if he does, but that was his gimmick. I'm old. I'm too cantankerous for this.
Didn't like getting the what treatment, did he?
No. But then he handled it well, which worked perfectly. And then the rifts between Roddy and Stone Cold, in terms of, you could just tell they're just two cantankerous men that like working a crowd, and they could probably, you know, in terms of, I'd sit there and watch that for a bit longer. Actually, didn't need Carlito. Just let them go at each other and, you know, see where it went. I was quite kind of intrigued to see what was going to happen before everything's cool man came down, because he had one phrase and that was cool, and obviously ate the bat. Hey, Roddy taking the apple from Carlito, you're like, yeah, there you go, that's the guy I like.
We love Roddy Piper, but let's not overlook like the horrendous like racial gimmickry, yep, heel stuff he ever did that we still kind of laugh about, and I can still think of terrible things Roddy Piper did and I would laugh about it. Just like, what's wrong with me? He did terrible things, but he was funny and Always Sunny as well, so there you have it.
So that was WrestleMania 21. What a great show it was. My moment is going to just be all of Shawn Michaels versus Kurt Angle. Has anybody got anything other than that?
There is a woman in the crowd for that match who is such a Shawn mark, and anytime he is in the angle...
It's not Sunny, is it?
let's just leave it there then, shall we?
So woman in crowd, even that is Sean Curtis Jace. There's
Triple
nothing else.
Dunking on JBL was very funny too.
And Chris Jericho's hair.
Oh, and also like when Kane came out, the ladder set on fire. That's a nice touch. That's a nice touch. Actually, Kane can make things come out and fire come out of mainly other than things than the ring post. Well, I like that.
And now he can solve problems like potholes in Knox County, so good on him. Right, we're going to take a break for a couple of weeks. It's the summer holidays after all, so we'll see you soon. Keep up to date on @thePUpodcast to find out exactly when we'll be back. It may be just in time for SummerSlam, you never know. Anyway, when we do return, we'll be breaking down WrestleMania 20 from Madison Square Garden, Eddie and Benoit's crowning moments, Goldberg and Brock's farewell fares badly, and Undertaker versus the future mayor of Knox County. Carrie, where can people get you on Twitter?
@CarrieSparkle.
Carl.
Anchorman616.
And Anton.
@SkyAnton.
We are @ThePU Podcast. I am @MattDavisFC. Rate and review, share and subscribe. I'm Matt Davis, and this has been Parts Unknown.
Oh, The Parts Unknown Wrestling Podcast is a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.